Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Huddle podcast in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. And I was thinking today, after 15 hours in the television studios on Saturday night and Sunday night, what do I need on this Monday morning? And it's more Jeff Rimebold.
Nah, more football, man. More football.
More football conversation. We are inducing the caffeine as we bring you this podcast. It was a long weekend, but it was a good weekend, Jeff. And it was a telling weekend. And we did expect some clarity in terms of the playoff picture, and we got that.
I think we got exactly what we thought we were going to get in most cases. Now, there were a couple surprises in the games, but all in all, I think we're headed into the playoffs or into the last week before the playoffs just about where we thought we'd be.
So we're not going to paraphrase Dennis Green. The Bears are who we thought they were.
The NFL is who we thought they were.
But Mark Sanchez is who we thought he was.
Yeah, you're right. And I think more and more you see... As you study a player, it's about their body of work, and I was hopeful, really hopeful for him, a second chance opportunity in Philadelphia. But that doggone turnover thing just continues to haunt him. It doesn't seem, no matter where his address is, the turnover bug's living right next door.
And is it a situation where players, you really find out about players in those moments of duress, in those big moments? I think it was about 15 minutes before he threw that interception, I said now he's got a chance to go and write his own chapter of a football life. You know, we were promoting the football life shows. And, you know, he did have a chance to step forward and be the man and the guy. And, again, he's gone the other way.
Well, you know what? Interesting. Frank Gans, who was a longtime special teams coach in the National Football League and probably one of the best that's ever taken that job in the NFL, used to say to the players like this, at those critical times when man measures man, and that's when you find out exactly who you are. And, you know, you really feel for the guy, but Mark just can't seem to get off of that forcing a ball, you know, making a bad decision at the most critical of times. But I think what's positive when you look at the weekend's games is you flip that over and you look at Tony Romo, who had carried that, you know, label for so long. Boy, did he play great football last night.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Tony Romo a little bit later. We'll go back on week 16 and look over the big games. We will take your questions in the mailbag, and we will look ahead to week 17 in the NFL. As you will have gathered by listening already, we're not in a studio this week, which sounds like we're in... Well, we got told we were in my bathroom last week was one of them. But listen, it's a few days before Christmas. We're struggling to get studios and engineers, but we didn't want to miss out on bringing you this podcast. So if it's a little bit echoey, we apologize, but we're going to crack on anyway and look at all of the big news. And more playoff pictures have been clearer, Jeff. So we go into the AFC. We know that New England are in, Denver are in, Pittsburgh are in, and Indianapolis. So that's four of the six in the AFC. We've got five of the six in the NFC. Seattle, Arizona, Green Bay, Detroit, and Dallas. Let's start with Dallas, because we had that game last night. Dominant performance against the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, and I think, Neil, when you get to this point in the season, what's more important than what a team's record is, it's where they are trending at this time, because you want to be hot and you want to be healthy at the end of December. So as you look at these teams, Dallas, hot right now, playing extremely good football. Their defense has played better last week than I've seen their defense play in years in Dallas, frankly. Romo's playing his best football now. They're a little nicked up because of Murray's hand injury, but he went out and played last night, so he's shown he's capable of playing hurt. So I think Dallas is right where you want to be at this time.
Dallas had a lot of pressure on Andrew Luck last night, and it was mostly from those front four. How important is that in this Tampa 2 defense to have that?
Absolutely critical, because you're not going to dedicate fifth and sixth guys to the rush in the Tampa 2 scheme. It's based on coverage, five under, two deep coverage. So you've got to get pressure up the field against the passer out of your four down linemen, and you've got to get up the field and cause confusion in the running game. And I thought Dallas's front yesterday completely outplayed Indianapolis's front. Now, again, that's an indication of what, as we talked about yesterday in the studio, that's where Andrew Luck has masked some problems over the course of the season for Indianapolis. They're not good enough up front.
Indianapolis are a team that they're in the playoffs because I think they dominate the AFC South. They are a team that will beat the majority of other clubs in the NFL, but they won't beat the big clubs. So they're a step below, aren't they? Or they're a step or two below the elite teams in the NFL.
I agree with you. And if that's the criteria that you go on, and you look at these last games, the Cleveland game where they struggled to win, the Dallas game where they got completely outplayed, that's not the kind of football you want to be playing at the end of December. So, again, as Dallas trends upward, I see Indianapolis trending in the other direction.
It is about that, isn't it? How you get hot at the right time. And Green Bay was one of those teams you said you were a little bit worried about yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? You look at them offensively, particularly where they, that's where they're going to make their money. Offensively, they've not played well 2 weeks in a row. Mm. They go up to Buffalo and get beat in Buffalo, and then go to Tampa and struggle to score points at Tampa. So those are two, defenses that are good, but they're not great defenses. They're not elite-level defenses. Now, on the other side of the coin, Green Bay's defense has started to show signs of life, and that's going to be positive going into the playoffs. But if you're a Packer fan right now, you have to have some legitimate concerns about their offense. They are not scoring points. I think they've scored 3 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks, and that's not enough to win playoff games.
We mentioned the first Saturday night game, Philadelphia and Washington, the one that went on forever and ever and ever and into overtime. It was great. I mean, we got off air at 5:30 in the morning, but we enjoyed seeing Philip Rivers come back, and that is typical. That's just what this guy has done throughout his career, isn't it?
You know what? When we're sitting there with Sean and talking about quarterback play, you asked Sean a question about Philip Rivers, and the thing that he went to right away was leadership. Mm. And you think about a guy like Philip Rivers, and then you juxtapose him with the guy that got sat down in Chicago, Jay Cutler. Yep. Cutler physically is the superior player. Mm. But when it comes down to who you want leading the troops, who you want making those passes on fourth down that you got to complete, you want a guy like Philip Rivers. And isn't it amazing as you watch them, if you're a Charger fan, how he elevates the play of every single player around him. Not just, it was incredible to me to watch Eric Weddle, who's a safety, a defensive player, over there hugging him as the field goal team kicked that field goal to win the football game. He is a guy that transcends positions. He transcends color. He transcends everything in your football team, and he leads everybody. And that, to me, is a sign of a truly great one.
And I think that's an interesting point you raised there about the demeanor and the leadership of Philip Rivers. And he is fiery. He's up and down the sideline. He's in people's faces. And Jay Cutler, as an example, isn't. He would be slumped on the bench. And I go back to sound effects, one of the mic'd up things earlier this year. And it was Gus Bradley, and he was mic'd up. And Blake Bortles comes off the field, and Gus says to him, "I don't mind, he'd just thrown an interception." He was like, "I don't mind the play, because that's going to happen. You're a rookie." But he went, "Be careful of the body language," because he said, "Guys are looking to you." I mean, as a coach, is body language important?
Absolutely critical. Mm. Absolutely critical, because everybody on that football team is going to look at you when you don't play well. You are the focal point. As the quarterback, you're the focal point of the offense. You're the focal point of the football team. You're the face of the franchise in many cases. And how you carry yourself in times of adversity is going to dictate how other guys are going to react in times of adversity. So if you think back to the great ones, you may see some disgust in their own performance in a Peyton Manning, in a Dan Marino, in a Brett Favre. But Brett Favre, when he threw an interception, you're more likely to get a smile out of him than you were with his shoulders slumped over like somebody just shot his dog. He is – those kinds of guys rally their teams, and they have confidence then when they don't make a play. To go back out on the field, like, "Come on, boys, let's go. It's time to go." Joe Montana, in his own way, they're in the Super Bowl. They need a drive to beat Cincinnati with about 2 minutes left to go in the game. They get in the huddle, and what does he say? "Hey, look over there. Isn't that John Candy in the stands?" I mean,
it takes all the pressure out of it right away.
Absolutely, but that's being a leader in whatever personality structure you have. Philip Rivers is fiery. Joe Montana wasn't, but they both were able to keep themselves above the fray and above bad plays.
I think when you look at quarterbacks like, I don't know, John Elway in his prime, or like you say, a Favre or a Dan Marino, you got anger. They were angry at themselves. They'd be fired up. They might throw the helmet and stuff, but never did it look like a rabbit in the headlights.
No.
Or like the stage was too big for them. It wasn't, oh boy, what am I going to do now? It was never that.
And you know what? And you look at Tom Brady. Here's another one. Now, Tom will get in some guys' faces, and he's been known to drop an F-bomb or five or six.
Yeah, he's put a few dollars in the swear box this year. You like that, right?
But, yeah, I mean, he's going to... He has high expectations for himself, and he has high expectations for others. And you got to live up to his expectations. Now, again, I don't know if I've ever seen him throw an interception, and he's thrown plenty. Mm-hmm. Every quarterback that's ever played has thrown plenty of them. I don't know if I've ever seen him throw an interception and have that look like, oh, don't ask me to don't ask me to throw that out again. I just don't. Oh man, that corner's too good. He wants to go out there, and he said, Dial that one up again.
One play and clear, on we go.
That's exactly right. And that's a great terminology right there. One snap and clear.
Mm.
That snap's over with, you got to go on to the next one.
Do you know who told me that?
Who?
My guy. Andrew Luck. I must stop going on about him because he's a really good guy, but everyone's going to turn against him if I keep harping him up when I shouldn't. I mean, he just wasn't at the races.
I tell you what, you could do a lot worse than Andrew Luck. And you know what's amazing about him? There's a guy, talk about leadership, there's a guy leads in his own way. I said yesterday on the podcast when we were talking about it, I don't think he's ever said anything worse than darn in his whole life.
Right.
But he will tell you this, he's the king of the nerds. Right?
Oh yeah, he loves that.
And
I think that's why I like
him. And I think he has that affinity to that image.
Yeah.
But he can be out there with some of the toughest street guys in the world and still lead them and never swear one time.
Mm.
You know, he just, because he's such a great competitor. And again, same thing with him. Yeah, he's thrown plenty of interceptions, but what you see out of him is an eagerness to get back on the field and throw the ball again. Not, oh man, do we have to go out there again?
Yeah. Kansas City and Pittsburgh was our other main game on Sunday. And I look back at this one, Jeff, and it's Kansas City. You know, if you hold Steelers to 20 points at home, it's not a bad defensive effort.
Mm-mm.
I just think not enough weapons were there for Kansas City. They got some of the young guys involved, but you know, they're settling for field goals instead of.
Yeah, you know what? I thought it was a masterful job by Dick LeBeau.
Mm.
He gave up yardage but didn't give up points.
Yep.
And he let you have some of those perimeter, you know, to Taylor and Thompson and those guys out there, you know, the young guys that actually did show well for him, took the run away to Charles and kept the ball in front of him. Now, again, you look at it, and Alex missed on a post cut.
Yeah, don't make that.
That could have been a big, big momentum changer and game changer. You got to make those plays against a defense like Pittsburgh. You know, I thought Kansas City played well, but Pittsburgh just played better, made more plays.
One of the more disappointing performances of Week 16 for me was the Baltimore Ravens. Now, Houston are tough on defense. We know all about that with J.J. Watt. But this, to me, felt like a game that Houston, Houston was still alive. But Houston won this game, but I felt like Baltimore should have had this game. It was a big game for Baltimore, and they didn't show up.
They didn't show up in a game that had huge playoff implications, and I think maybe the most disappointed guy on that Baltimore sideline had to be Gary Kubiak, who's going back to Houston, a place that he was the head coach for, I think, 5 years and had some success, and then just, you know, failed at the end miserably, and it was tough on him and tough on his family, and to have a chance to go back into Houston and kind of pay that back a little bit. You know that was on his mind, but they just did not play well. I you know, again, another, and I'm gonna keep banging on this one and you know, until somebody listens. Can you show me a player who dominates the game more than J.J. Watt does on defense? Now, again, we can talk that all we want about the MVP thing, but you know, if it's truly an award of the outstanding player in the league,
yeah,
he's got to be in the mix.
If he isn't, I mean, it does become a bit of a, not a joke, but it becomes a PR or media award, isn't it? If this is a football award.
Yeah, I think it devalues the award if he's not.
Yeah.
Because here's the reality of it, Neil. He's playing on the left side of the defensive line, which means if you want to on offense, you just run away from him all day.
Yeah.
Well, he's a factor on everything. I think he had seven solo tackles, four tackles for loss, a sack, you know, four passes knocked down.
Another sack on a two-point conversion, which wouldn't show up in the stats.
Exactly, doesn't show up on the stats. But when you look at it, you just go, how does the guy do it every week? They slide the protection to him. They double-team him on the runs. They sprint away from him. They do everything they can to mitigate him as a player, and he just keeps making plays.
He looked like your classic throwback yesterday. He was covered in blood. He's got tissue stuffed up his nose.
I'm going to tell you something. To me, now, if I was a marketing guy, that's the guy I want. Mm. I want that guy selling my product.
Yeah, absolutely. The Atlanta Falcons beat the New Orleans Saints 30-14. Saints have now dropped five in a row at home, and they're out of the playoffs. And it was both sides of the ball again, Jeff. It was, you know, much has been made of the defense, but it was Drew Brees turning it over as well. It was everything. Two interceptions from Brees. And then it kind of ended in embarrassing circumstances with OCU Manura waving at him as he jogs to the end zone.
Yeah, you look at how the game started. Shoots, they run a kickoff back, I think, 99 yards to the 1 yard line. One play later, they're in the end zone, and you're thinking, well, here we go.
You're off. Right? Yeah, you're off from running.
Atlanta's going to, you know, capitulate. But it didn't end that way. Atlanta hung around and made enough plays. Again, what you saw out of the Saints defense was, they didn't tackle very well. They got gouged with a couple runs. But Robbie's defense played well enough to win the football game. Right now, there's, as you say, there are problems deeper than just the defense in New Orleans. And offensively, they have not, you know, they've been so up and down, you know, and that's not been their trademark. They used, you know, normally were consistent. You can count on at least 28 points every time you went out and played.
Cleveland lost 17-13 to Carolina, so Carolina and Atlanta will play for the NFC South next week. A bigger problem for the Browns, who've had a good season. You know, they're out of playoff contention now, but they have had a good season. They lost Johnny Manziel, and he only threw 8 passes yesterday. He wasn't great in those early stages. Then he suffers a hamstring injury. Now they're probably going to go into the offseason. They don't know where they're at with quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly correct, because in my opinion, once you are eliminated from the playoffs, now you would want to get him every single snap you can in these last two games and let him throw the football. I know you're trying to win games. I understand that. But the reality of it is you got a multi-million dollar investment right there that you don't know if he's good enough to lead your organization. So in the short term,
so week 17 becomes a great training camp scrimmage, if
exactly.
you will.
Exactly. Week 17 is an opportunity for you to really get good tape on the guy. Training camp environment and even preseason games aren't enough, because you're not going to see the full package out of the defense. So this was an opportunity for Johnny Manziel over these, what would have been the last 8 quarters of the season, to get tremendous amount of experience and time under pressure, which is the only way you can truly learn in the National Football League at quarterback. And now he gets a hamstring injury, and that's going to set him and the Browns back.
There was a quote this week, yesterday after the game, Brian Hoyer said, you know, I had 0 practice reps all week. And I think they was trying to make a story of that. But I think that's probably the good thing, right? Because Manziel needed that
time. Yeah, that's standard operating procedure in the National Football League. Anybody that thinks that they're getting a second quarterback reps, especially this late in the season, Neil.
Right.
Because you got guys that are beat up. And they can't be out there taking 100 practice reps in between Skelly and team and inside run and all those things. So for a guy like Hoyer as a backup, he's going to get mental reps during the week, not physical reps.
And especially with the stuff you say about Manziel, they want to look at him
absolutely.
as much as they can.
Every minute that they can get that kid in the facility and work with him, either on tape, in the weight room, on conditioning, on his reads, anything you can do right now is critical in his development. This is what people got to understand. If you're an owner, if you're a Jimmy Haslam, you got investment in these guys. You got dollars, hard-earned money in those guys, and you want to know if there's going to be return on that investment. And so the only way you can find that out is to get them out there. You've got to run them out there, and you got to play them.
It's hard now. They won't regret not putting him in earlier in the season, because they were still alive in the playoff race, so they had to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But now it's a different story, and then again, for him to go out and get hurt.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
And I hope, I hope, frankly, it's not an injury that's going to preclude him from playing at least a little more during the end of the season.
Seattle, I haven't seen this game. Obviously, I thought I'd actually go to bed last night when I got home for a few hours of sleep, but I did look at the match reports this morning and some of the highlights. Seattle absolutely hammered Arizona. And we've talked about this before. They're definitely back on defense. Now, it was Ryan Lindley at quarterback for Arizona, so that's got to be factored in. But Seattle, what they've done, Jeff, they had that spell in the middle, and they lost to Kansas City, they lost to Dallas, they lost to San Diego early in the year, they lost to the Rams. And then they came into this spell where they were going to play the 49ers twice, the Cardinals twice, and the Philadelphia Eagles. And in that span, they've won the lot, and now they could be the home field advantage again.
Yeah, and what defines them during that time, Neil, you know, it's going to be, number one, they got healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They got their linebackers back.
Yep.
Two, they got their swagger back on defense. And when they play defense like they have played in these last 5 weeks, they are going to be a handful for anybody. Now, offensively, what was amazing last night, and it was interesting because I did stay up and watch the game. That's how bad I am. But I saw Todd Bowles trying everything he could do to get pressure and create plays on defense because Lindley just wasn't going to do it for him on offense. They had to take chances. And when you do that, you know, that's why there were so many big chunk plays by Russell Wilson in that offense last night. Almost 500 yards of offense for Seattle. And a lot of it came, you know, really on four plays, four big chunk plays. And that's the risk you run when you have to do those kinds of things on defense. But, again, I think Bruce Arians cut Todd loose to go be a high-risk, high-reward guy.
Yeah.
Because he knew, frankly, Lindley wasn't going to be good enough to win the game for him.
We watched a lot of hours of football over the weekend. We loved every minute of it. But anything else from Week 16 catch your eye, Joe?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, you look at those teams. You look at those playoff teams. If we go through them just quickly, Seattle trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
Arizona not trending in the right direction due to health. Green Bay kind of flatlined right now. Detroit, I think, a little bit negative. I don't like the way they responded in the Detroit game. And Dominic Raiola, are you going to be around for the playoffs?
Yeah.
Dallas, trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
New England, playing really good football, trending in the right direction. I'm going to give Denver a kind of flatline because of the questions about Peyton's health. They can say what they want, but I just see too much of a change in their offense to say that that's just based on the ability to run the football. Pittsburgh, I think, is trending in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And now, again, your guys, I got to say, going in the wrong direction. So, again, one week to reevaluate it again next week, but that's how I see them going into the playoffs.
That is interesting. So there's nine teams there in the playoffs. We've got two in the AFC going in the right direction, two in the NFC going in the right direction. Green Bay and Denver kind of hanging on, and it's not looking good at the moment for Detroit, Arizona, and Indianapolis.
Before we get off the playoffs, explain one thing to me so that I can get a better handle. Because as I look at that NFC, Neil, I'm saying home field advantage in the through the playoffs in the NFC is going to be critical
to
who gets to the Super Bowl. How do you see that coming out of here?
So it's basically if Seattle wins in the final week of the season against St. Louis, then they will have home field advantage. And I think they've got they will have the tiebreaker. Let's have a look at all the records. They'll then be 12-4, the same as the winner of Detroit and Green Bay. And I think the tiebreakers go that way towards Seattle. The winner of Detroit and Green Bay will definitely have a first-round bye, though. So that's important for those teams. But you know, I think Seattle have now got themselves back into that home field advantage. Denver can still clinch home field advantage, but they'd need to win tonight in the AFC, and they'd need New England to lose in Week 17. So the Patriots have almost got home field advantage. And you know, I've heard you talk about the 3 points favorite automatically for the home team, but I think it's even more than that if you're playing in New England and if you're playing in Seattle. Those are real home field advantages.
Great point, because the weather, the crowd, the way that New England plays at home, and then you go the other direction, and I don't care who you are, you don't want to go out in Seattle and have to play against the 12s in an elimination game.
Let's pause and talk about one man who was a star on Sunday night. And that's Tony Romo. So his numbers now for the season. 70% completion rate, 3,406 yards, 32 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. That's a quarterback rating of 114.4. His numbers on Sunday night, he went 18 of 20, 218 yards, 4 touchdowns, and then they pulled him. He could have been in and put even more up on that. He's entered the MVP discussion, and do you think that's right? When you think about, I mean, I think of the game when they had Brandon Whedon in. That showed how valuable Tony Romo was to this team.
Well, wait a second now. Just listen carefully. well, you don't even have to lift. Yeah, I can hear that drum beating, that MVP drum beating from out in Dallas. You know, they're going to talk about that because, you know, really, you got to. The guy is, the numbers don't lie.
Yep.
And what he's done for his football team. And then on top of it, what makes it even more amazing to me, here's a guy that played games with two broken bones in his back and you know, has been able to come up with those kind of numbers. So certainly for the MVP award, I think he's in the discussion. But more importantly to me, because that's a media award, more importantly to me is what he has become to his football team.
Yep.
Which is not that, you know, hair trigger guy that at any moment may blow up and throw a critical interception. He's now become a seasoned, veteran, experienced, comfortable leadership quarterback. And that is a huge change from the Tony Romo that I saw when I was in Dallas.
Yeah, and I've been critical of him in the past. And there's no avoiding some of those late season meltdowns that he's had. Now, I always tried to qualify that with, well, he did win a lot of games for them playing that way as well. But there's been stories out of Dallas where, you know, and I know people within that organization, and you know, Tony did change plays and he did freelance a little bit and it did probably leave the team exposed. But he's seems to have tidied that up more, Jeff. He seems to be a mature quarterback now.
Yeah, you know what? And I think that's, you know, you look at his personal life as you go through his history. Young kid out of Eastern Illinois, makes it as a free agent, playing for Parcells, and just really a good kid, you know, gunslinging backup. And then all of a sudden he gets the job and gets all that comes with being the quarterback on America's team.
Yeah.
And all of the adulation and all of the attention, and now he's dating Jessica Simpson, and now his personal life's in the media, and he goes on, they have a week off bye, and he goes with Jessica to Mexico on a holiday rather than staying and watching tape, and now all the controversy brews, and you got to understand that Dallas media, too, they're gonna do everything they can. Well, finally, he settles down a little bit, grows up a little bit, gets married, has a family, a little bit different, maybe view on how what's important in life, and he starts to see the end. And more importantly, I think he starts to see the end to come for guys around him. He and Jason Witten are extremely close friends.
Oh, big time.
So don't think that they haven't talked about, hey, Tony, you know, we don't have many more years. What do we got to do to get that ring, to really finalize our legacy as Cowboys?
Oh, when I sat and chatted to Jason Witten, I asked him about the friendship in the summer, and I kind of expected we're good friends, and then he'd move on. And he almost got a bit misty-eyed. He was like, you know, there are certain people you bond with, and we have a special relationship. And he said, one day we'll sit by the fire and tell our football story. He was properly went right into it. You know, Jason Witten, you could tell how close they were. And I think that translates onto the field as well.
Sure it does. And it also, early in his career, maybe caused a little friction, because you remember Terrell Owens couldn't deal with the fact that Tony had a guy that was his favorite, right? And it wasn't T.O. And so now you had that circus brewing. So through it all, he's grown in to be the guy that we see today. Now for him, and I hope for him, I'm not a particular Cowboys fan.
Get a couple of big playoff wins.
Yeah, that would be so good for the guy, I think, to really let people sit back and see what he truly is, and one of the finest quarterbacks that's playing in our generation.
Well, that leads me on to my next question then, Jeff, and this is what I wanted to try and tackle today. Is Tony Romo elite? So we look at, you think of Aaron Rodgers, we think of Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, they're in that top class. Now, is Tony Romo in that class? Because actually, you look at the numbers, there's not a lot of difference between him and those guys this season, but obviously, it's not always been that way. Well, is he up there?
I think it depends on the criteria that you evaluate from.
Sure.
You know, it's that same old thing. Well, he's never done this in the playoffs. He's never won a Super Bowl. He's
right.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I'll take Dan Marino. And, you know, I mean,
over Trent Dilfer?
Yeah. You have Trent Dilfer. I'll take Dan Marino, okay? Yeah. Your guy won a Super Bowl. Mine didn't. But I'll tell you what. You take Trent Dilfer. I'll take Jim Kelly. Okay,
yep.
He didn't win a Super Bowl either, but I'll tell you what, I'll beat you 9 out of 10 with him.
Dan Fouts.
There you go.
There's a lot of guys
like that. So let's evaluate him in his time, which is today, against the quarterbacks that you can compare him against, and you take the numbers and you take what he can do on the field, and I say, yes, he is. He's amongst the, when you say elite, he's in the top 5% of guys at his position.
And I think it's, you know, again, people always think you're against their team. You know, I get this a lot from Cowboys fans. Oh, you're against the Cowboys.
I think Cowboys fans historically are a little thin-skinned.
Yeah, I would say, but I think it's good for the NFL that the Dallas Cowboys are back in the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely, because it is, like them or hate them, and I think they're just as many haters as there are, yep. How about them boys, guys? Mm. You gotta know that they're gonna bring attention, and Jerry Jones, you can love him or hate him.
See Jerry yesterday in that box.
And there, you got Staubach, and you got the governor of Texas, and you got Emmett Smith, and you got beautiful women, and yada yada yada.
Oh, Jerry!
I kept waiting for Obama to show up in there. I mean, it's like, can you get any more? Let me just say this. Jerry has never met a camera he didn't like.
This is true. The stars were not just on the helmets on Sunday night in Dallas.
But that's his deal. That's what makes the Cowboys the Cowboys.
That's what he wants. Move the needle.
That's
right?
Their mystique. You're right. They move the needle just like the Raiders have their mystique, if you will. And you know, there's some teams in the National Football League that could learn a little bit from that.
We look at Jerry Jones, the owner, and we see all of that glamour, and he does encourage it, and there's the huge video boards and stuff. But let's talk about Jerry Jones, the general manager, for a moment, because we criticize Jerry Jones, the general manager, quite a bit. Now, go back to the draft. Everyone was saying he's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to take Johnny Manziel. He didn't. He bolstered that offensive line with Zach Martin, who's a very good offensive lineman. That's all he's done over recent years is build the offensive line.
Yeah, but you know what? I think he probably had to get treatment for rope burns on his wrist.
Oh, okay.
Wrist and
ankles. It wasn't him, yeah.
from his son, Steven.
Locking him in a cupboard.
to keep him from pulling that deal. But
Dad, go get the coffees in just before this turns to pick.
you gotta know, though, that when you evaluate him, and I was doing this last night, you know, I was looking at it, and you go, they take Frederick, the center from Wisconsin,
yeah, the year
get
before.
Criticized for that. They signed Doug Free to a big contract, get criticized for that. Mm-hmm. They take Tyron Smith with the first round pick, get criticized for that. You know, then again, they take Zach Martin early last year. But what he's done quietly and without a lot of fanfare is built an offensive line that, number one, can run the football.
Yep.
Is young and will stay and play together for a long time. Mm. And thirdly, they can protect the quarterback. And that's really, really important when you got Tony Romo back there.
Yeah, he built the best offensive line in the NFL. So I'm going to take this question out of the mailbag, actually, Jeff, because it relates to Tony Romo. A very nice tweet from Dave Foote, who says, great analysis on Tony Romo by Neil and Jeff. Well, I actually just stood next to you, but it's very nice of him to say so. Your analysis on Tony Romo last night when he threw the touchdown pass to Jason
Witten.
Yeah, and Dave asks, is that what is meant by going through his progressions?
Yeah, it is. And I'm telling you what, it was even deeper than that. And it's, sometimes it's frustrating because we have so little time on the show.
It's quick, isn't it? We have like 90 seconds or so.
Because there's so much in that one little play that you could see. I mean, the design of the play was so good because they had Beasley on a quick out so that if they got blitzed, they had a hot read. They had Dez running the vertical into the boundary so that if they got single high press man, he could throw the throwback, the back shoulder fade. And then to the field, you had three verticals with Witten on the middle read. So if it's cover two, he knows he's going to win there. But what Romo did so well was he had the patience, knowing it was only three-man rush,
yep.
He was going to be protected, that he moved the safety, that weak safety, all the way off the hash mark with his shoulders, eyes, and hips.
Yeah, that was a great illustration of that.
Then
yeah.
Came right back to Witten in the middle read, and I tell you what, you can't execute it better than that. Early in his career, I've seen him have the same opportunity, but hustle through his progression and go too fast to the middle read and not move the safety enough, and you know, the safety can make a play.
I wanted to ask you this last night, and we're influenced by time, so we know we've only got a few seconds when we're at the touchscreen, but because he gave such a good look to the right, does he do that because he's got so much confidence that he knows Jason Witten is going to be exactly where, so he doesn't have to look you know what I mean? He doesn't have to look to see where Jason Witten is.
Phenomenal point.
He has to. He knows he's there. Phenomenal. So I know he's there, and I'm looking over there.
And how is that built? How do you know that that guy's going to be right there?
Hours and
years of throwing middle reads to one another.
Yeah.
It's amazing. When you get to the highest level, right, with these guys who have played together for so long, and this is why it's hard for young receivers to gain the confidence of a quarterback, and you see it happen in New England a lot, is that the veterans who played together for a long time, that quarterback can read what that receiver is going to do just on his body language, how he's leaning, when he's going to come out of his cut, all of those things. And so Tony knew, as soon as he saw it was three-man rush, he knew it was protected. He could really move the safety with his shoulders and eyes, knowing that Jason was going to be right in the middle of the two deep. And it was a thing of beauty. I mean, it was really a beautifully executed football play.
One other thing I want to talk about, Jeff, before we get on to our picks for Week 17 and the mailbag, is there was a lot of football played at the weekend, and this story will get lost among all of the Tony Romo performances and the big touchdowns. We're very proud of Menelik Watson, the Oakland Raiders offensive tackle from Manchester. You know, one of the few Brits in the NFL doing his thing out there on the West Coast. And it was a great story this week. Menelik, he met a four-year-old Raiders fan. Her name was Ava Uria, and she's got a heart condition. And Menelik donated his entire game check to her and his family this week. I thought that was fantastic.
You know what? These are the kind of stories that we in the media have a responsibility to get out
there.
Because I'm so tired of hearing about the guy who beats his wife, the guy who, you know, falls asleep at the wheel at 4 o'clock at a stop sign, the guy that fails a drug test, all those things. And, you know, you look at all the players in the National Football League. There's a ton of players in the National Football League. And we let 8 or 10 guys, you know, kind of change our view of what kind of people these guys are. Let's talk about the guys like Menelik Watson, who nobody said, hey, you're going to win an award if you go do this.
Right.
He did it because that's the kind of man he is. And the NFL needs to really, in my opinion, and we as a media have to take the time to say, hey, thank you, Menelik, for standing up, doing the right thing, and hopefully other guys will look out there and say, hey, there's a lot of good I can do. You are privileged to play in the National Football League, and it gives you a podium to do so much good, if you will. Menelik Watson, I love you.
Yeah, and I would think that's a good point, Jeff, because sometimes from a news point of view, you feel like you have to report the hard-hitting stuff and the stuff where guys have got in trouble. And, you know, we've worked with guys that come over here, and, you know, 99% of the people in the NFL are good guys who you would want to take home to meet your family. But as soon as you say that, people just think you're throwing out a PR party line. Like Kev teased me last night about Andrew Luck. You know, Andrew Luck is good people. He's somebody you would trust with your team, you'd trust with your kids, whatever. That's just the way it is. That's the truth of it. But we almost feel like we can't tell those stories. But, you know, John Sullivan, great guy.
Absolutely.
Harrison Smith.
Yeah, you go through all,
you know,
those guys,
all these people.
All those guys. And, you know, we live in a TMZ world sometimes.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's about what train wreck can we publicize next?
Yep.
I mean, that's not just football. That's the athletics. That's the movies. That's any celebrity quote situation. The thing that as a society, as people, we have this insatiable desire to watch the next auto wreck. And
people fail. Yeah. You almost want to watch people
and
fail.
I think maybe somehow that makes us feel better about who we are, which is kind of a sad state, but that's reality.
Yeah.
But I'm not going there, because I'm going to talk about a guy like this, and I'm going to trumpet a guy like this, because we don't talk enough about guys like this.
Agreed. Good on you, Menelik. We're proud of you for that. Absolutely. Let's get on to Week 17 then, Jeff. We'll make our picks, and then we will answer the questions in the mailbag. So the game's still a little bit all over the place. At the moment, we know that the Bengals and Steelers has been flexed to Sunday night football. So that's the late game on Sunday, and then everything else is still to be determined. But we'll start with the Carolina Panthers at the Atlanta Falcons.
I tell you what, this is a huge game. You know, the number one Carolina Panther fan in all the world lives in my house, and he is not sleeping right now. He's already he last night we stayed up and watched the Seattle game, and he talked to me for 2 hours about how Carolina's going to win this game. But I'm going to tell you something. They got their hands full because they're going to go to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And when we talked about this yesterday, you and I were discussing it, and I thought if Carolina was at home, I'd give the nod to Carolina. Atlanta in Atlanta, that's a hard place to play. The Georgia Dome will be rocking. So I'm going to give the Falcons the edge. Just don't tell Keikoa.
Yep, I'm going Atlanta as well. I just think as well that they can still score points. They've still got Julio Jones.
And that's the thing. You know, that secondary in Carolina is questionable. We saw the issue last night when Hoyer came in and he threw the big touchdown pass. And, you know, you had to really wonder what Roman Harper was doing.
Oh, my goodness.
He screwed a drop to coverage. And can't do that in the playoffs. It just every point, every possession, every down becomes more critical.
Cleveland at Baltimore. Baltimore still alive in the playoff race. Cleveland, as we've said, there's question marks at quarterback. They're back to Brian Hoyer.
You know, it's in Baltimore. Cleveland is coming off of two straight losses. I know Michael rallied him up, but I just really feel like Baltimore has too much to play for right now.
Yep, I'm going Baltimore as well in that game. Big game in the NFC North then, Detroit at Green Bay, because both teams have qualified for the playoffs, but they're playing for the division title. And, you know, we talked on Saturday night about players banged up at this time of year. They're playing for a first-round bye, which, you know, is big, isn't it, Jeff?
Well, it's huge because of the fact that, you know, your body has gone through training camp and 18 weeks of NFL football. That's a lot of pounding, particularly on the big guys, particularly on the linemen, the running backs. Everybody's sore and hurting right now. So that week off to get yourself a chance to heal, rest up, get a little extra film time, that's a critical part of, you know, making a playoff push. I know it certainly happened to us when we went, you know, won the Eastern Division. It gave us a week to heal. And I know that each of these teams wants that week desperately. The game's in Detroit, in the Motor City. But right now...
Oh, no, this one's in Lambeau.
Oh, it's in
Lambeau? Yes, in
Lambeau. Ooh, my bad, then. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to give the Packers the advantage because I just don't know if Detroit, that quarterback is solid enough under pressure situations to not throw a critical interception
against
football team.
I'm going to go Green Bay as well. It has been a long season. I'm looking forward to Christmas week off because I've eaten a lot of pizza. My stomach's taken a pounding. I need to try and detox for a week.
You've been playing hurt for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Jacksonville at Houston. Jacksonville got their third win of the season last week, but this is a tough ask. Again, when they played Houston last time, that defensive line dominated the Jags offensive line.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a tough one for them because J.J. Watt will, you know, have a chance. The Jacksonville offensive line has really been porous and a trouble spot for Gus and his crew all year long, so I'm going to go Houston.
I'm going to go Houston as well. Just on that Thursday night game last week, the game-clinching sack from Cedric Marks took him over, I think it was 8.5 or 9 on the season. One sack, $600,000 bonus. He got up making the money sign.
You know what was amazing? I tell you what a great thing. NFL does such a great job of capturing the emotion of a game. And the post-game locker room.
Gus has some fun in there, doesn't he?
Yeah, you know what? When I watch that and I just say, you know, I hope the owner will just stick with the plan because he's got them going where he wants them. They're a football team that likes one another. You can see it in the way they play. You can see it in the way that they celebrate the wins. There'll be more wins coming. Just stick to the program.
San Diego at Kansas City. San Diego win and they're in. Incredible again. They got in dramatic circumstances last year. They're players are falling down like flies, but as long as they've got number 17 there at quarterback, they've got a chance.
Sure do, and Kansas City's now officially out of it, I believe, and so with that in mind, I'm going Kansas City.
Kansas City?
I know you say I'm crazy, but I'm going Kansas City.
Home field,
Home field. I just think that they'll come in, they'll play loose and free, and they got pride. You know, they want to show that they're a playoff-caliber team. And, you know, I thought they played well enough to win in Pittsburgh, and now they get San Diego at home, and I think they're going to win the football game.
All right. Now, after I've said this next pick, I want you to slap me hard in the face, because the New York Jets at the Miami Dolphins, I'm going to pick the Jets to win in Miami.
Wow. You know what? That's how far it's gone. That's you have now descended into complete Dolphin fandom, because you see the worst in everything.
What are you going then?
You go, I'm going with the Dolphins. How can you go? I tell you what, that is shocking.
Defense. Jets defense was really good last week. I'll tell you what, though, Ryan Tannehill played really well for Miami.
You know what? There's another guy that we don't, you know,
we don't talk about him a lot, do we?
Four touchdown passes last Miami quarterback to do that was
Dan Marino.
Absolutely.
Not bad company to be keeping. Chicago at Minnesota.
Wow. Boy. The Bears just have really descended into nothingness, and it's tough for me to watch that. And, you know, I watch Mark's sideline manner, and he is so professional and so he's doing all the right things except winning football games. And I just don't think that they're going to win up there in the cold, and Teddy Bridgewater's playing really good football right now. He's another young quarterback we don't talk about much, but you look at him, you look at Bortles, you see those guys, Derek Carr out in Oakland. There's three guys in this draft that you can say, I think that's you got a future in with that team.
These two teams feel like they're one's at the end of a regime and an era. Could be the end of the Jay Cutler era in Chicago, the end of the Mark Trestman era. And it feels like the Vikings are just getting started with Mike Zimmer and Teddy Bridgewater, which is why I'm going Minnesota.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's really a good observation. And I think that the Minnesota has improved over the season. And there were some spots in the season where they could have folded their tent and just, you know, say, okay, we'll be 4-12, but they haven't, and they've kept fighting, and Bridgewater's getting a little bit better every time he goes out there to play.
Buffalo at New England. I'm going to pick New England to win. They always do at home. But is this time for Buffalo now? They lost to the Raiders last night. They might as well go back to E.J. Manuel and see what you
got. Yeah, I think you got to look at that and say, hey, you know what Kyle Orton is. Kyle Orton's Kyle Orton.
He's going to be Kyle Orton. He's going to be that. Yeah,
and he's never going to change. If E.J. Manuel has any chance of being your guy, you need this evaluation process. This is a really disappointing situation for me. You're Buffalo. You got a chance to get 10 wins for the first time in I don't know how many years in that franchise. Yeah. You go to Oakland, who's not a very good football team, and then you go out and lay an egg like they did. Now, they fought and they, you know, tried to get back in it and all that, but those are the games you got to win, and you're still in the playoff hunt.
Yep.
And you got a chance to win that one, get to 9, and go to New England, and New England's probably going to rest some of their players in that game, and you might get 10 and sneak into the playoffs, which is huge for Doug and his staff. But then they just go out there and play as poorly as they played, and the defense go from being a team that mauls the Packers, right, and then comes back and lets – Oakland, who struggled to score points all season, hang some numbers on them.
Going New England?
I'm going New England.
Philadelphia at the New York Giants. Jeff, as bad as the Giants have been all year, and they're bad on defense, and there's worries along the offensive line, I start to wonder if they're going to turn it around next season, because that Odell Beckham kid is special.
Well, you know, here's the deal. You look at this, they've won 3 straight at the end of the season. So they're trending in the right direction. And all the Coughlin haters, all the guys that have already got him fired. You better understand, you don't get 3 straight wins at the end of the season after you're out of the playoffs and play as hard as they play and do some of the things they do if you don't have the locker room, if you don't have the heart of the team. So I think he still does. I think that offensively they've got some very, very good young football players. Your quarterback is still in his prime. He's shown he can win a Super Bowl for you. You got the greatest young receiver, in my opinion, in the league, in Beckham. You got a tailback who's shown that he can make big plays for you. They're a good young football team that when Cruz gets back next year, they're going to have weapons. Where I see him deficient, Neil, is on defense. And I, I'm not attacking Perry Fuel, but I'm just saying, at what time are you going to live up to your reputation as a defensive coordinator? Because they, especially in the back end, just make huge mistake plays. Yeah. I mean, just huge mistakes.
That Chris Givens touchdown yesterday, wide open, wasn't he, down the right sideline? Who are you going for in this one? They're Philadelphia at the Giants.
I'm going to take Philadelphia. But
yeah,
I think
I'm going to take Philadelphia.
I'm hoping that Tom can come back for one more.
Cincinnati at Pittsburgh, then. I mentioned this game has been shifted to Sunday night.
Does that mean we have it?
No, it's the late Sunday, so we won't get that one. I assume we're going to get Carolina at Atlanta, and I guess we'll have a chance at San Diego, Kansas City, or that Detroit-Green Bay game. But either way, we're going to get 2 meaningful games as well on Sky Sports. Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. It's a tough one, this one, because it's in Pittsburgh. You know, we saw some stuff from Pittsburgh yesterday, and I'm struggling with this one because big game, I think, of Andy Dalton struggled in the past, but Cincinnati have got talent as well. This is hard to call, this game.
Well, I think what will be interesting to see is, will they get Polamalu back and will they get Ike Taylor back? Mm. And Ike Taylor's not had a great season, but Ike Taylor's a veteran who's been through the battles. And I would much rather go into a game like this with Ike Taylor than some guy that hasn't played very much. Mm. So I think if those two guys come back, I like Pittsburgh. And I did see enough out of Pittsburgh offensively.
Yep.
Bryant gives them a vertical threat. Mm-hmm. We saw that. Obviously, Brown is one of the fine young receivers in the league.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, while he didn't rip off any big runs, Le'Veon Bell, I thought, played really well. And Big Ben, little question about that knee that he hyperextended, but I thought Big Ben is playing better football than he's played in years.
Yeah, I'm going to go Pittsburgh. You?
Yep.
All right, New Orleans at Tampa Bay. I do think the Saints get back on track for one last week. Buccaneers are struggling big time on
offense. Yeah, I'm going to take New Orleans.
All right, both go New Orleans in that one. Indianapolis at Tennessee. Well, this is what the Colts do. They win in the AFC South, right?
Yeah, and then, it's one of those games that, you want to get points early, get Andrew Luck out of the game, and then get into the playoffs.
Dallas at Washington.
Cowboys.
I'm going Cowboys as well to win that one, even though I think they're locked into the number three seed, so they may start to rest some guys, but I still think they can get that win. Oakland at Denver.
Raiders? No, come on, man.
I almost wrote that then. Now I've written O-E-N.
No, I said, I said Raiders, you went O-M-G.
Yeah, exactly. Arizona at San Francisco. So I think Arizona's position is going to be pretty much set. San Francisco, we saw make a good start last week and then let it go.
I just think right now Arizona is so hamstrung on offense, just have so little opportunity, even with the playmakers that they have. They've got to find a way to get them the football. I'm going to take San Francisco, because I think there's a little bit of pride in that locker room, and those guys will come out and want to finish with a win.
Yeah, I'm going to go San Francisco as well. And our final game would be St. Louis at Seattle. I just think Seattle are rolling now.
Yeah, I take Seattle. St. Louis, another one of those Jekyll and Hyde teams, because 2 weeks in a row they throw shutouts, and then yesterday they come out and just get shish kebab by the
shish kebab.
The Giants. I'm going, come on, man. Will the real St. Louis Rams please sign in?
It was a shish kebabbing. I'm going to try and use that in one of my columns. Mailbag time then, and this is a good question from Graham Wilson. He says, which section of which team — there's a lot of teams in this question, actually — which section of which team will cost that team a win in the playoffs? So we just talked about Arizona's offense. I'll tell you mine right now. That Indianapolis Colts offensive line is going to force the quarterback to make more mistakes. Now, he's making enough on his own anyway, but there's lots of these teams that have got question marks still, aren't there?
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you a team that I think could win the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's talented enough to win the Super Bowl, but the guy pulling the trigger, his history has been that he's going to make critical errors at the wrong time, and I'm going to say Detroit and the quarterback, Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, because there's a lot of weapons around him.
I'm just telling you. And you illustrated this very well yesterday. They have enough weapons on offense, and they're strong enough on defense. If he doesn't make mistakes, particularly in the red zone, they can go deep, deep in the playoffs.
Dan Payne asks, do you guys agree with the Dolphins' decision to retain Joe Philbin? Now, I think that the team, they haven't really progressed as much as you would hope, but they're a better team than their record indicates. And I guess what I think has happened here is Ryan Tannehill has gone like that this year. He's gone on an upward curve. And I think if you go in with a new head coach and a new system, does that halt the development of your quarterback? So I get that part of it. I just question the owner walking into a locker room after an emotional win and saying straight away, our coach is coming back next year.
Well, I'll tell you what. Do you ever see those old mob movies in the mafia where the guy gets kissed and then they whack him?
Okay.
Let me just tell you. This is football, and this is coaching football. And when you're coaching football, you recognize that the guy is looking you right between the eyes and pulling the trigger, and the bullet is coming right for you. And it's just a matter of time before you're going to be splattered all over against the wall like in those mob flicks.
I just had this image of Stephen Ross sitting in the sitting in a chair.
Take Joe, him out for a ride.
Joe, I got a deal you can't refuse, Joe.
Matthew Burns says, can you talk X's and O's, Jeff, on how you go about trying to stop tight ends like Antonio Gates, Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, Rob Gronkowski?
Well, it's changed, you know, and this is the thing that went back in the day when people would leave the tight end be a tight end. You'd line up a big defensive end over the top of him, and you would make it difficult for him. You'd hit him as he got off the line of scrimmage. Then you'd have a linebacker at the next level bang him before he, you know, got up the field, and you'd just basically beat him up on the line of scrimmage. Mm. Now, offensive coaches, those sneaky dogs that they are, I think they're all closet communists anyway, but they take the freaking guy and they put him out there at wide receiver. Hey, wait a second, that guy's 6'6", 280 pounds. What the hell's he doing at wide receiver? Get him back in here. Well, they don't play that game anymore. Now they got him in the backfield, they put him at wide receiver, they put him in the slot, and now you got a matchup. So I'm gonna tell my 5'9", 185-pound corner, hey, go over there and play this guy. He was a power forward at Kent State in basketball, but you can handle him.
Oh, and guess what? You're not allowed to put a hand on him.
Yeah, and after 5 yards, you can't touch him, right? Have a nice day out there, sir.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they just move them around so much. It's so very difficult. So the key thing is you got to draft a guy in the secondary who's long and strong and can go body those guys up but still run with them. Mm. You get a linebacker matched up on him, typically they can't run good enough. If you get a DB matched up on him, now we're on defense, we can't touch you after 5 yards, but you can come down and shove us at 11 at the point at the point that the route breaks. So, you know, until they look at the rules, it's just going to be real difficult. You can double them, you can, you know, try and put a linebacker on him if you got a linebacker and bump him on the line and then play zone over the top of it. But the reality of it is when you do that, now you've lost rush potential inside. So, you know, I think it's really, really difficult situation to defend those types of athletes with the rules as they are today. So, and the way the offensive coaches play.
So we want a long, strong safety who hits like a linebacker, runs like a cornerback.
Yeah.
They're easy, aren't they? Well, they make it sound so easy, Jeff.
Just go get me Cam Chancellor. I know there's guys weren't like that on every street corner, right?
That's so, what a steal he was when you think back now.
Yeah.
Jeff, that's it. We're out of time.
What a fun. I tell you what, it's never enough time. I want you to know, Merry, Merry Christmas. It's been so much fun being back here doing this face-to-face and certainly sitting in the studio with you, Neil. It's you are a true pro's pro, and I tell you what, I don't know if I work with anybody that knows the players and the game as well as you do. You do an outstanding job. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, and Merry Christmas to all our listeners. I'm going to get all misty-eyed now. Me and Jeff are going to go sit by the fireplace, tell some football stories, do our Tony Romo and Jason Witten. But we do appreciate everyone who downloads this podcast as well.
Everybody that listens to us, you make our Christmas a merry one, and we hope that in some small way each week, you know, we make your existence a little better, your life a little better, and we appreciate particularly all of those of you who tweet with us and send mailbag questions, because we're here for you. You're not here for us.
Yeah, and on that, thank you. Special thank you to Scott Collier, who did a cartoon of the Inside the Huddle parody.
Absolutely. And it was, I'm going to use that, Scott, if you don't mind. And to all the people at NFL UK who have given us the opportunity to bring this podcast and Sports Lobster, very much, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you. We will all be back. Myself and Jeff, we will record a special podcast between Christmas and New Year, but it's going to be sort of highlights of the year. So it's going to be a lot of interviews from the fan rallies that were held earlier this year around the International Series games. And then myself and Jeff will be back just after Wild Card weekend to break down the first round of the playoffs. So until then, we thank you all for downloading this podcast. Have a very Merry Christmas, and we'll speak to you in the New Year. Bye for now.